1-2 pitch on the way. Stays with a fastball, swung on and missed, and Merriweather has done it again. The Blue Jays beat the Yankees 3-1, and they take 2 out of 3 in the Bronx.
So I guess we can say, Barker, that the forecast in the Blue Jays bullpen right now is Merriweather, right? I'm sorry, I'm only going to say that once. I've been dying to use that. I'm not doing it anymore, I promise. Baseball Central, Jeff Blair and Kevin Barker. 2-hour Baseball Central / Blue Jays pregame show ahead of the Jays and Texas Rangers. Today, 4 o'clock, first pitch thereabouts from Globe Life Field. Today, we're going to talk about domination with Julian Merriweather. He joins us at 3 o'clock. We're going to talk about pitching in general with Jays pitching coach Pete Walker. We're going to talk about the Rangers, Mr. Barker, with Rangers TV analyst David Murphy. And, lots of stuff to talk about. We'll critique Vladdy and Bo's defense. We'll ask the question, how many of you knew Randall Grichuk was a Yankees killer? I didn't know that. And is Randall Grichuk in the process of answering a challenge? Talk about that. What to expect from Steven Matz. And a way too early overreaction to the Yankees. Plus, at some point, we need to talk about Shohei Ohtani. We just have to. And we will take your calls in the second hour. 416-870-0590, star 590, 1-888-666-0590. Give me your one dominant takeaway from that series win over the Yankees, Mr. Barker. I know you've got a lot to say. Let's keep it general before our friend Pete Walker joins us from Globe Life.
Bobichet made an adjustment throwing. How's that?
All right. I think, explain it to me.
He's a big deal when it comes to not having a ton of people in your rotation that strike guys out, going to put the ball in play a lot. Shortstop is a big deal. His throw, you can see it. Sometimes it's working around in his ears, between mm-hmm. those ears. It just looked like when he was catching it, he was letting it eat. Don't flip it over there. You're not good enough to do that. Catch it, have a little momentum going towards your target and letting it eat.
It almost seemed to me, Kevin, as if he's better when he doesn't have to think about what he's doing with the ball.
That's humans in general, yeah. But when you're playing, you know, between the lines on a baseball field with the best players in the world, you got to simplify these things as much as possible. Look, he wants to be the best shortstop in baseball. He's made no bones about that. Is he? Meh. It's a work in progress. But you like it that he can make game-to-game adjustments. Mm. One game, the arm wasn't there. Maybe it was just because he was trying to, you know, get a little cute with it and flip it over there, have a little wrinkle in it. Well, be a little easier on your first baseman. You make the adjustment, your feet are a little bit better, you have a little bit stronger arm because you're throwing it harder. Makes sense.
It does indeed. Busy day for the Blue Jays. We mentioned 2 hours away from first pitch. Globe Life Field in Arlington. Very pleased to be joined by Pete Walker, Blue Jays pitching coach. Pete, thank you so much for joining us today. I know it's a busy day. You know we always appreciate your time. First question, very easy one. Give me a one-word description of Julian Merriweather.
One word, huh?
Yeah.
It's good to be on with you guys. Exceptional. How about that?
That's a great
one. Enough?
That works for me, man.
That's tremendous. Okay. Right. Well, the second question.
That's what he was.
He was very exceptional. Have you seen velocity like that in spring training? You know, anything that he's doing routine-wise, something that he's doing out of the bullpen that could tell you that he's going to maintain the velocity. Again, the secondary pitches, the 20-mile-an-hour difference in the changeup, that's excellent. But when it's 99, that's a difference maker.
Yeah, he was really strong his first couple outings for sure. It was evident in the swings he was getting against him. But this spring, I mean, obviously he had a little bit of an issue during spring, but finished up strong with a couple of appearances. There was a little hesitancy, to be honest with you, to add him right away or not, and I'm glad we did because he looks great, he feels great. His stuff, when he throws his side sessions, even early in spring, it was, you know, they were 95 plus. So this is nothing that we're really shocked that's coming out of his arm right now. He has it in him. He's got major velocity when you're talking about the 96, 97, 98, 99s. So he can do that. It's really just a matter of keeping him healthy, getting him in a good routine now out of that bullpen, where he can be a huge impact for us. He's shown in a short amount of time that he can. Now it's just a matter of making sure he can do it over the long haul.
Don't want to get ahead of ourselves too much here, Pete, but have you guys had a discussion about, and I'm not saying I'm in a hurry to see this because I want him to stay healthy, but have you had a discussion about when, where, or how he might get into back-to-back games, or is that too early right now?
No, it's not too early. I mean, obviously we have a way we keep track of pitchers and their health and how they're recovering and bouncing back along with just communication. So no, he's a full go for us right now. So obviously we're going to watch it closely and make sure, again, we're not going to push him too hard, but if there's an opportunity to get him in back-to-back games where he's feeling great, then we're going to do it.
How hard has it been for you as a pitching coach to back Jordan Romano away from himself? Does that, like, you know, there's some guys that just want to put their head down and just, but you have to sometimes back off a little bit, right? Yeah, let your stuff work. Has it been tough for you to do that?
No, that's his mentality, so we're not going to change that. But I think in the first game, I mean, we talked about it with Jordan, just, you know, the adrenaline, he was a little too amped up. Like you said, and I think once you get through your first game or two, you start to settle in, and you know his mindset is his mindset. He's not changing that. He's very focused, determined, and that's the way he's going to pitch. But there's a fine line, you know, that controlled aggression, and that's where he has to stay. He can be as aggressive as he wants to, but you know, when he gets out of his delivery a little bit, or it affects his approach, then you got to do something. But he's an animal on the mound, and we're not going to change that. He looked really good in his last outing, as we saw, and I think you'll continue to see that now as he settles in.
Pete, I know one of the points of emphasis for you in spring training was bases on balls and limiting bases on balls. Yep. How much of what we saw this weekend was Yankee Stadium, Yankees hitters, and you know, and the first three games of the regular season, right? It's not Grapefruit League anymore.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we had a great spring training, but it's spring training, you know. And you know, once you get into the regular season, you see Aaron Judge and Stanton and that crew in there. You know, they can do some damage. We shied away from it a little bit, but I think, you know, that will settle in. I mean, our focus is still the same. All the guys have specific things that they're working on to help in that area to limit walks. Whether it's getting ahead, whether it's finishing guys better. So everybody has their own agenda. But I think you'll see, like in the last game that we faced the Yankees, I think you'll see this on a more consistent basis where we're not just giving free passes. Again, every team in baseball wants to do that, right? But I think it is definitely an emphasis with us, and you saw it in spring training. But I definitely think Yankee Stadium, first series, opening weekend, everybody wants to get off to a good start, so you get a little fine, you nitpick a little bit. But I think you'll see these guys settle in and attack that strike zone with their best stuff.
Obviously, you got Steven Matz in the offseason. He's pitching tonight. When you first see a guy that his stuff doesn't match up to his numbers, what are some of the first things you start looking for?
Well, you really look at where he's making mistakes and where he's getting hurt, number one, and you see if there's any type of a pattern. And so with him, you know, it was really just taking a look at what he's done in the past and looking at maybe some areas we could adjust. And, you know, with his stuff, it didn't make a lot of sense, you know. So I think it's an approach. It's a little bit of, you know, how he's utilizing certain pitches and certain counts. And you know, if we can get him to, get into a little bit of a groove early, I think you'll see him take off. I mean, he's got great stuff. He's the prototypical left-handed power guy that's out there. You know, you don't come along too often. So, you know, 95 mile an hour fastball with great off-speed stuff and left-handed. So he's got all the tools. And I think what we saw in spring training, it's just a matter of fine-tuning a couple of things. And, you know, like anything else, you get off to a good start, you start to roll. So, you know, the focus right now is for him just to stay within himself, not try to do too much, trust his stuff, all those things, and you know, we're hoping he gets off to a good start.
You know, you had an interesting comment on a conference call a couple of days ago. You were asked about Steven Matz, and you talked about confidence. And I thought you had your point was there's when you're talking about a pitcher lacking confidence, you know, in air quotes, there's always an underlining issue, right? There's always an underlying issue. The guy didn't roll out of bed and say, I don't have confidence. You said you need to find it. Now, without giving away state secrets, were you able to find what you think was the issue with Steven Matz?
The jury's out, right? Mm-hmm. You know, we've definitely did some digging and we had some great conversations and we feel good about our approach now. You know, and so we'll see how it plays out. But, you know, I think it's a coach's, you know, job to dig, and we have some good people in our pitching department, obviously helping out as well. But, you know, with him, the confidence, you can say, hey, you should have confidence in your stuff and go out and pitch well, but it doesn't always work that way. I don't care what anybody says. Like you said, there's always an underlying theme or something maybe that's affecting that. how they're working, because it's tough to have confidence when you're giving up, you know, consecutive doubles in the gap on supposed good pitches. So it's a matter of approach. It's a matter of locating better and then sequencing your pitchers a little bit better.
Okay, TJ Zoik yesterday, for me, yeah. I don't know a ton about pitching, but you could see the obvious that he looked like he was cruising a little bit through that. You know, four innings, 63 pitches, yep. Not too bad. You got the lead. You gave up one run. You know, people were watching that would think, why would you take him out fourth inning with 63 pitches? I don't want to put you on the spot because this is a marathon, not a sprint. But, you know, people do have to remember, coming off that 60-game season, Yankee Stadium, first start. Is that something that throughout your rotation, should people watching the Blue Jays expect to see a little bit of that, at least early on?
I think early on, I think ultimately you want guys to get deeper into games, and we're still focused on that, trying to get guys through that third time through. And the more success we have early and we keep these guys feeling good about their game, and I think, you know, we'll have opportunities to do that against certain teams. TJ was a good matchup against them, you know, get the ball on the ground when he needed to, for sure. But, you know, his spring, coming out of spring training too, you know, when you look at pitch counts, we built him up, but not necessarily to where a starter would be as far as 90 to 100 pitches. So, you know, he was up over 60 in spring training. We spread some outings out, and then we had to readjust our schedule to line him up for that game. So that was one reason. You know, we got four innings and 60-plus pitches out of him in the first outing. We were extremely happy, and we will build off of that. Yeah, some of it has to do with how he was built up in spring training and the adjustments we had to make lining him up for that game.
Yeah.
Pete, when do you hope to have an idea when Robbie Ray will be in the rotation? I mean, everybody seems really optimistic, and we know that he was built up before the injury. Would he basically be good to go when he's ready to go?
Yeah, that's what we're thinking. Obviously, he just threw a side session and had a really good one, threw a number of pitches in that. He's going to face hitters this next time out here, and then we'll reassess after that. But stuff was there, and he's up to 97 miles an hour in his bullpen. I think he just threw another side where he's getting between 93 and 95. So velocity's there. Feels good. Now it's just a matter of facing some hitters, and hopefully we have him back very soon.
I've asked Steven Matz this about the baseball. Have you noticed a difference in size of it? You know, bigger seams, ball not carrying like it was last year. Have you noticed anything like that?
Well, I've seen some balls jump out pretty good out of the yard. So I kind of thought everything was just the same. But then I've also recognized a few balls that I thought were struck pretty well that didn't get to the warning track. You know, so it'll be interesting to watch. I hope that's the case from a pitcher standpoint. Uh-huh. You know, that miss hits don't sneak out of the park anymore. You got to get it, and when you get it, it's gone. But I think that would be great for the game, to be honest with you, and for my pitching staff. But I definitely see – I feel a little bit different seams on the ball. They seem to be a little bit more raised and bigger. So it's interesting. But, again, we'll see how it plays out after the first month. I'm sure all the numbers will be out each month, and we'll get a feeling of if it's really making a difference or not.
How will you know tonight, first inning? Looking back at Steven Matz, the first 25 pitch is a big deal for him. Those first 25 pitches, was there one thing you will be looking for that will tell you, hey, he's going to have a good night?
I think that secondary stuff's important for him. You know, the curveball, getting that curveball over, using his changeup. But the main thing is his fastball command, where he's locating it, how he's locating it, and the life on it. With him, it's kind of everything. There's not one thing that'll really stand out, but I think, you know, when he can effectively use his off speed stuff behind the count and also, you know, locate his fastball when he needs to, I think those are obviously keys for him.
Hey, Pete, listen, we really appreciate you joining us today. Stay safe. Thank you for your time, and keep it going, my friend. Be well.
Yeah, you're the best.
You got it.
Good luck.
You got it. Great talking to you guys. Take care.
Thanks. Right,
bye-bye.
Pete Walker, Blue Jays pitching coach, again, around 4:07 today, 4 o'clock, first pitch at Globe Life Field in Arlington, Texas. It'll be 40,000 people on hand, more than 40,000.
Yeah.
The Rangers are selling all the tickets they can for that game. The number of tickets available for the second and third games of the series will diminish, so the 40-odd thousand, however many there will be, at today's game, the number of tickets sold will diminish.
You scratch your head a tick, won't it?
No.
You have a sold out crowd the first game.
Oh,
you don't the next the next couple of games? That's odd.
Yeah, that is odd. If you're going to have a sellout for game one, or if you're going to sell all those tickets for game one,
I don't get it.
Then why not do it?
I'm with you.
For the second and third game of the series. But, yeah, there's not – I keep telling them, there's no playbook for this.
There's not.
There really is not a playbook for this. Just a reminder that to celebrate the Blue Jays home opener on Thursday, we're giving away more Blue Jays prize packs this week. Listen for the secret player names every day and text them to 590-590 to enter. You can win a Blue Grit kit, which includes all sorts of Blue Jays merchandise, such as face masks, T-shirts, and discount codes for jerseys. Text Chatwood to 590-590 right now to enter. Good luck. And for full contest details, go to sportsnet.ca/590. Also, don't forget to download the MLB Ballpark app to play games and keep up with the Jays. Be sure to tune into the home opener with our coverage starting at 6:30 p.m. Thursday on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. We have got a lot to break down from the weekend. Vladdy, Bo, Gritch, the Yankees. Look ahead to this game as well. Julian Merriweather will join us at 3 o'clock, and we'll go over some of the things Pete Walker just told us. This is Baseball Central on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. So we know that the Washington Nationals are going to get back in the field. Well, they haven't been in the field yet. They'll take on the Atlanta Braves. On Tuesday, the National Series against the Mets was postponed because of COVID-19 outbreak. This from John Heyman. The Washington Nationals have 11 players currently in quarantine, four of them COVID positive and seven close contacts. So they will open the season shorthanded Tuesday against the Braves. This much we know, Max Scherzer, Steven Strasburg, and Juan Soto are among the majority of players not in quarantine. So that just in a couple of minutes ago, the Washington Nationals will have 11 folks or have 11 folks in quarantine right now. They're still going to open the season against the Braves on Tuesday. Their series against the Mets was postponed as a result of COVID-19. So, society's opening up. I'm fully prepared to hear more of things like that when it comes to Major League Baseball, especially early. And it's going to be the same case. It's the same thing we saw last year when baseball started up again. It is going to take, you can put everything in place. You can vaccinate everybody. You can have all that good stuff. It is going to take time for guys to get used to the protocols now that the games have started again. It's different in spring training. Different regulations, a different way of life in spring training for ball players. And once the season starts, now you're doing more travel. You're spending more time in hotels, et cetera, et cetera. So, as I said, I'm fully prepared to see more of that. And again, we keep our fingers crossed that the Washington Nationals COVID positive cases are not serious and that we see those players back in the field ASAP. So, Kevin Barker, lots to talk about after that weekend series. Against the Yankees. We spent a lot of time talking about Julian Merriweather, and I'm gonna shelve that discussion right now because he joins us at 3 o'clock, and we'll spin a little off of that. We've got to talk about the Jays defense, and we were texting during the game. Look, we talked going into the season about how the Jays infield defense, we needed to see how it was going to develop early. Vladdy Guerrero still learning first base. Marcus Semien's playing second base. He's been a shortstop for most of his recent seasons. Bo Bichette is at shortstop. We know that he's a work in progress, and Kevin Biggio has moved from second over to third base on a full-time basis. So we saw some plays this weekend. And here's the thing. I understand anytime there's a ball near first base, a throw, and Vladdy either misses it or catches it but doesn't put his foot in the bag, people are going to go, well, a better first baseman would have made that play. And that's entirely possible. There were two plays not made this weekend that I would bet you $1 million Justin Smoke makes. Having said all that, let's talk about, because folks are going to be watching this. So when we watch a play around first base, what should we, you played first base,
yeah.
What should we look at from Vladdy that will tell us he's at fault on a play, or you know, he's made a good play and saved an error.
Yeah.
Like, how do you determine which, when there's a play like that, who is at fault? Because that one throw from Bobichet, like I talked about, I thought, what's Vladdy doing trying to keep his foot in the bag? He should be moving off the bag to get the ball. And your point was, no, you move off the bag to get the ball when the ball is in the air.
There you
when
go.
The ball bounces in front of you, you still keep your foot, try to keep your foot in the bag and scoop it.
Well, the foot in the bag is a big deal. Vladdy is one of those guys because he's not very comfortable. You saw Jay Bruce do the same thing. They run over, they put their opposite hand that their gloves on, the heel of that foot in the middle of the bag. That makes zero sense
to
me.
So if you catch left-handed, you put the heel of your right foot in the middle of the bag.
You do, so you can stretch further. That's the whole point in that. Right. But why you walk over or run over and place your heel of your foot in the middle of that bag makes zero sense. What you want to do is you want to be able to stretch your fullest. If I'm in the center of that bag with my foot, a ball is thrown, say, to Vladdy's left. If he's facing where the throw's coming from, to his left, I can't stretch as far. The ball tends to, because say Bo is running in that hole, that he'll catch it, backhand it, running towards third base. He flips it. It's got that sideward spin mm-hmm. to it. When it hits the ground, it's going to go up and away from Vladdy, towards home plate. You need to be closer to the play on the bag. Whoever's telling him to run over and get very stationary, that's not how you play first base. I don't see what's wrong with Vladdy's first base play. You know, any ball that you stretch for that's in the dirt, that's the thrower's fault. To say that 1,000% of the time you should all the time pick those plays, you've never played first base. You have no idea how hard these guys throw the ball, how much movement they have, and when it hits the dirt, it's moody. It will kick one way or the other. The best thing you can do is put yourself in a very athletic position to give yourself a chance to pick it. Work from the ground up. That's why you always see a guy go over and not stand straight up and down. Mm-hmm. So he has to go down, up to down. You don't want to do that. You want to go down to up. It's easier to lay your glove on the ground and bring it up than it is the other way. Just work on his feet work. Get his foot in the right position. And people won't be coming on saying that Vladdy shouldn't be playing first and that play has to be made and that's not Bo's fault for making a bad throw and why doesn't Kevin have a stronger arm? And it would just one thing makes another thing worse. And until his feet work around the bag just gets a little bit better. It's not awful, just a little bit better. And sooner than later, I'll do an Instagram thing on that, the way mm-hmm. I think first base should be played. Now, again, it's – there's numerous ways you can figure out how to play first base. This is the way that I learned. Lyle Overbay plays the same way I played. Lyle Overbay's pretty good first base.
Lyle Overbay's one of the best defensive first basemen I've seen.
Don't get stationary is my point. And just to having better feet work and maximizing your stretch. That's the whole point in playing first base. Your value as a first baseman is around the bag. That's where you're going to make your money. I say your money because you're playing that position because mm-hmm. you can hit.
You're going to make your money at the plate, yeah.
Defensively, you're going to make your money picking it and having good feet work and helping guys out that make bad throws. They're not always going to make a good throw. And you can help a guy out a little bit. You have to have really good feet work. He doesn't. That stationary thing's not going to work. So he gets a little bit better at that. He's got good enough hands. He's got a super strong arm. He's got the best arm in the infield. It's not even close.
We don't give him – well, that's one reason that Luis Rivera would always kind of fight back a bit when people say he can't play third base. His arm's good enough to play third base.
It's the best arm on the team.
It's a rest part. Yeah, it is. It's the best part. It's the other stuff that wasn't there.
He's a hitter first guy.
Interesting comment from Marcus Semien. And I think it was after, I believe it was after the second game. I could be wrong. But he was talking about the Yankee Stadium infield. Yeah, I don't know, maybe he's covering up for Bo, which good on him if he's doing that. We talked about how that infield can be tricky, how it's a hard infield. You're smiling. I'm not going to ask you in particular about that, but there are differences in infields, aren't there? Like, I know when you would go to a game at Wrigley Field and the Cubs had a lot of ground ball pitchers. Mm-hmm. They would deliberately leave the grass
higher
down the third base. Depending on who was playing, to slow the ball down. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure that happens. That happens a lot. Well, I mean, look, we see at the Rogers Center. How many times you see him water down? I mean, depending on who you're playing, depending on who you're playing, it's going to determine how much water there is around
who's,
the bases.
Who's pitching?
The pitching, yeah. Correct. All that stuff.
Yeah.
Is there a difference in infields though around the game? Like, is there such a thing as an infield that gives you a quote unquote trickier hop or a quote unquote harder infield surface than elsewhere?
I would assume, you know, they, it's like you said, they don't water it enough. Is the surface, you know, not smooth enough? Does it not have enough dirt in it? Yeah. Look, these are big leagues. That's Yankee Stadium. Now, yeah. I've never played in that stadium. I played in the old one. The old one was tremendous. It's the sun part of it. It's the left fielder in Yankee Stadium that have a big issue.
And we saw that, yeah.
Those are things that, you know, are an issue. You got to communicate a lot. You got to, you know, tell your buddy if you can't see the ball. Let him run out and catch it, those kind of things. The ground ball part of it. The very first thing you said, is he taking up for his buddies?
Bad if he is.
You take a little heat off your buddy because, you know, he's not doing something, you know, we expect him to do. Yeah, that's being a sort of a leader.
Mm-hmm.
You need a leader. The ground ball thing. Look, yeah, I think you're
all right. I'm just saying that's what was said. That's what was said. That's what I'm asking you. You're the player.
Into him taking up for his buddy than
right.
You know, Yankee Stadium. It's the Yankees. Like, and it's the big leagues.
By the way, you know the Yankees are overrated, hey?
Yeah, so are the Braves.
What? Whoa. Whoa.
The Orioles are in first place.
Oh, stop it.
Well, I mean, we want to go this way. Overreaction.
Overreaction Monday.
Yeah.
Orioles are in first
place. They are. I don't believe. I'm just saying.
Yeah, Boston. Boy, there's a lot of angst already in Boston.
Yeah, look, do we have time to talk? When are we going to break here?
We're going to go to break in a few minutes. I want to talk about the Jays scored all their runs and home runs, which is not a bad thing. But I want to talk about two guys in particular. I want to talk about Biggio and Tellez. What were they? I think I mentioned they did not have a very good series. Tellez didn't play.
Nothing for a lot.
Game 3. Nothing for a lot.
Yeah.
Look, Kevin Biggio, again, they're getting him out the same way they got him out in the second half of last year.
Balls up.
Got
a giant uppercut in his swing.
Right. Let's overreaction. It's only 3 games.
Yeah.
But let's talk about where they are after those 3 games. What did you see? And Rowdy Tellez in particular, because look, I didn't see a lot of spring training, but all I heard was for a while, he was like the talk of camp, and everybody was talking about what a great spring he's having. Then it just seemed as if he kind of fell off the cliff a bit.
So. Okay, but the fourth inning of one of the games, Rowdy Tellez came up with first and third, and he swings at a ball in off the plate and yep. a ball underneath his armpit, and he popped out to right field and didn't drive the run in.
That's less than
2 outs. These are graduation games for people like that. This is something I never learned till I started studying the game a little bit more. And you know, talent doesn't always play at the big league level. Sometimes you got to think your way through it at bat. And what I mean by that is Rowdy Tellez, before he walks to the plate, he's thinking, okay, I got first, I got third, there's less than 2 outs. I'm a slow guy. I do not want to hit the ball on the ground. I have a natural uppercut in my swing because I'm a giant left-handed hitter, and I start straight up and down. If you start straight up and down, a lot of the times you got some barrel dip below your hands because you want to get the ball in the air, and it's natural. What would you think you should be looking for early in counts to get the ball in the air? He swings at a ball in off the plate and an elevated fastball up and in underneath his armpit. These things you're talking about is graduation at bats. You want to stay on the field. You want a DH. You know, you're seeing other guys like Randall Gritchick talking about playing time. Okay. When George Springer comes back, who's sitting right now, Randall or Rowdy? These are the things that you need to see when you're coaching. You need to see a guy think his way through an at bat. And that's why he didn't play the next day. It is because those thought process. I think we don't need Rowdy Tellez to go 4 for 4. You need him to go 1 for 4 when it matters. That one mm-hmm. needs to be a quality at bat. Marcus Semien is a prime example. Comes up a third where the runner on third with less than 2 outs. He gets a 2-0 count. Instead of trying to get big and bridge somebody and get his name in the paper, what's he do? Because they're down. He just hits a little lazy ground ball to shortstop, scores that run. That's how you get back in games. Just because he's a veteran guy. doesn't get big in a certain count, and then you have Rowdy Tellez. I just think, you know, again, it's three games. It's like Vladdy. Vladdy needs those two. Vladdy, we talk about Vladdy differently than everybody else. I want to see Vladdy, you know, he had Darren O'Day, that submarine knuckle dragon guy that throws the ball way down there, right? You don't go up looking for a sinker in or a slider away. You look right down the middle. And in that one at bat, he was with a runner on second base. He took the only pitch that was right down the middle. And little fly ball he hit to left field on the sinker in. That's the at-bats I'm talking about, is those graduation at-bats thinking, what's this guy do that I don't want to do? I'm going to go up and center cut a guy, and until two strikes, that's what I'm looking for. That's the graduation thing.
David Murphy. Spit it out, Jeff. I was going to say Sweeney Murdy. I was thinking of Sweeney Murdy. David Murphy is a Texas Rangers TV analyst. The Jays and Rangers are now about an hour and a half away from first pitch at Globe Life Park. David Murphy will join us next. This is Baseball Central on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. All right, a reminder that we are going to take your calls in the second hour, 416-870-0590, star 590, 1-888-666. 0590. We will take your calls probably, my guess is around 3:20-ish or so after we talk to Julian Merriweather. We mentioned the Jays and Rangers are about an hour and a half away from first pitch at Globe Life Field. It's going to look a little different this game, to say the least. They're expecting a crowd in excess of 40,000 at the game. David Murphy is Rangers TV analyst. He joins us on Baseball Central. David, thanks so much for taking time out today. I know opening day, home opener, is a hectic time. I'm just going to ask you, how do you think it's going to look, sound, and feel after a year where we didn't have many fans in the stands?
Yeah, it's going to be amazing for these guys. You know, as a player, you want to play Major League Baseball, but you want to do it in front of a packed house. Opening day or any home opener is always one of the most fun times of the season. So I'm excited for these guys, you know, both teams. The Rangers, obviously, to play in front of these home fans, but obviously I'm sure the Blue Jays are going to be excited to play in a new stadium with a ton of energy. So it's going to be a good day.
You said about the new stadium. What are the dimensions of the stadium? Is it a hitter's park? Is it a pitcher's park? How's the ball carry there?
I think it's still to be determined whether roof open, roof closed. It's 334 down the left field line, 326 down the right field line. The bullpens are pretty deep. You know, 410, they kind of bullpens link up with the batter's eye in center field. The shallowest part and the gap is 374. Around each side, and then, 410 to the deepest part, 407 to dead center. People have talked so far that this is a pitcher's park, but when they did have playoff and World Series games here, there was some pretty good competition that was making it look like a bandbox at times. So I think, it's yet the full story is yet to be told.
Now, among the stories in this team that got our attention, certainly Nate Lowe had himself a pretty good weekend in Kansas City. But I'm also intrigued about Isaiah Kiner-Falefa because, you know, we focus so much on shortstop as being a position of influence in the game right now. And, you know, everybody's talking about Lindor and, you know, here we got Bo Bichette and the next free agent class is loaded with shortstops and all this. I'm just wondering how you view Kiner-Falefa as a shortstop.
Well, I got to do some media work in AA a few years ago, and Kiner-Falefa definitely caught my attention when he was there. He had great at-bats, and I knew that he could do a lot of different things defensively. He's filled a bunch of different roles. You know, he's even caught. I think that just speaks to his versatility. And, he played great defense at third base last year, enough to win a gold glove. So I think it was a great move to move to shortstop. It's tough for him to replace Elvis Andrus after being, you know, one of the faces of the franchise for so long here. But I don't know if he's going to be a Lindor or a Correa or one of these big name guys that's going to command $200 or $300 million. But you just love the kid for how hard he plays, and he just does a lot of little things well. He's kind of more of an old school player, and I think he's perfect in the leadoff spot right now. So he's one of the leaders on this team.
So far early in the season, have you got a gauge on how Joey Gallo's attitude's been?
So far, so good. And we've seen that results. We've seen that in spring training. It's easy for a guy that's a veteran player to kind of slough off spring training. But I think Joey Gallo is intent on living up to what he's capable of. And, you know, I think the sky's the limit there. We've seen 40 home runs. I don't think it's a stretch to say that he could hit 50 or beyond. You know, I think the big thing for him is just driving in runs and hitting with runners in scoring position. You know, we live in a day and age of baseball where you don't have to hit for a ton of average. But, you know, if he can get that average up to 240, 250 the way it was around his all-star year a few years ago, then, you know, he's going to be productive in this lineup all year long.
Mike Foltynewicz is throwing for you guys tonight. Is there, you know, I saw he had a couple of good starts in spring training. Look, we saw him when he was with the Braves. It was throwing strikes. Have you seen a noticeable difference mechanically? Is there anything he's doing differently to you know, pound the zone a little bit more?
So I was not in spring training this year, and I have not seen him pitch yet. Today's going to be my first day, but just in reading about him, I know the velocity is up, and I know that's the key in today's game because, you know, if you are sitting around 90, 92 miles an hour the way a lot of guys did 15, 20 years ago, then today's baseball, you know, game, which is it's centered on home runs, then there's going to be a lot of them. So if he can get that velocity back up, then he's a guy that's going to be a huge pickup. He's going to be a big-time bargain. He's going to be fun to watch.
David, last question for me before I let you run. What are your expectations for this team this year?
You know, I think just to progress, to take a step forward, to show that some of these young guys, a guy like Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, the Gold Glove in the year that he had last year, that wasn't a fluke, that he's going to build on that. Joey Gallo, as you mentioned, he's going to live up to his potential. A guy like Nate Lowe, who is a guy that's going to be a future face of this franchise for years to come, guys like that are going to produce. But we've talked about the youth movement here, and I think that's key, that a lot of these young guys are going to be a big part of that. They're going to have the number two pick in the draft this year so that they can hit on that. And then slowly over time, that's how winners are built, and that they can, you know, throw in a trade or a free agent or two here and there. And before long, this is going to be a contender.
David, we're going to let you scoot. Thank you for doing this, man. Again, enjoy the home opener and stay safe. Be well.
Have fun.
Thanks for having me, guys. Enjoy it as well.
Take care.
Thank you.
David Murphy. He is the Texas Rangers TV analyst. And, yeah, just to get you caught up a little bit here, the Nate Lowe, who we talked about, had a terrific weekend for the Rangers against Kansas City, of course, formerly with the Tampa Bay Rays, traded by the Rays with a player to be named later in Jake Gunther, the Texas Rangers, for three minor leaguers. And it's interesting when you look at the Rangers. We've talked a lot about the shortstops, right? And it is kind of the Cadillac position right now in the game. But I was thinking about this watching a bit of the Reds game on the weekend against the Cardinals and the Rangers game here. You know, the Reds have decided to go with Eugenio Suarez as their shortstop. They got Jonathan India playing second. They've moved Mike Moustakas to third.
Yep.
And you know, they let Freddie Galvis go. Freddie Galvis is now with the Orioles. And it's interesting here seeing the same thing with Isaiah Kiner-Falefa going from a Gold Glove third baseman and being moved over to shortstop. I just find it interesting because you really do get the sense that I don't know. It's always been an important position defensively, obviously. It is now a major offensive. It became a major offensive position a while ago, right? But it just seems now as if in some ways, Kevin, you are starting to see teams err on the side of defense a little bit at shortstop.
Yeah, I just don't understand why these teams want to take away a strength and put a player to a weakness, something that they're not familiar with. That's one of the things.
It's got to be based on some sort of analytic formula based on offense.
Sometimes you got to use your head a little bit and rely on some optics. How does it look? How do you know, are your pitchers throwing certain pitches to stay away from a position that, you know, you think is not a very good defensive position? That's one of those things. You know, the way these guys are hitting home runs, all of these positions now call on you to drive in runs. You know, not so much of getting hits with runners on base. It's so much as hitting the ball over the fence. And if you have a shortstop that can do that, you take the hitting the ball over the fence more than you would the defensive thing. I don't. Everybody can't hit homers. And the ball being deadened, you know, if you can hit homers, you're going to hit homers regardless of what the ball's like. You know,
I want to see this yet. I think we've talked about this, and we're a little guilty of just – and I'm not saying you, but in general – I need to see a couple of weeks of evidence before I'm prepared to say, you know, that the ball is noticeably different.
You have seen some little guys lay into some, and they've been getting caught on the warning track, and they're running around first shaking their head. When last year they'd hit that same ball, it's eight rows up.
Yeah,
you've seen it. Me, I think you're giving every advantage possible to a pitcher. I mean, what more advantage they need? You never see a lot of them. You know, you're seeing a guy two times, and then you're seeing a hundo for the next five, six innings. They got the shift. What more they want? I mean, just so you spike up a ball a little bit more so I can hit it four rows deeper? That's the least you could do.
Let's drag it back to the Blue Jays again ahead of today's game against the Texas Rangers. I want to talk about Randall Grichuk. We talked and his approach. Now, we know Randall Grichuk hits well against the Yankees. He loves playing the Yankees. Was a pretty good series for him. Did you like what you saw from him in terms of his approach? We've talked about a two-strike approach, shortening your swing, yada yada, et cetera, how everybody in the team is going to try to do this. Are you seeing that with Randall? And I'll just ask you, is he answering, again, three games, but is he answering a challenge here?
Sure, you play the hot hand. If he's hot and he's hitting, you're playing him. You know, if it's between him and Rowdy and Randall's hitting, you take Randall. You know, I love him defensively. When's the last time you seen him throw to the wrong base? When's the last time you saw him miss the cutoff guy? When's the last time you seen him, you go, man, that play should have been made, and it wasn't when Randall's around the ball? Well, it's hard to find a time. You know, he can play right field plus. He can play center field. I wouldn't say plus, but he's not going to hurt you in center field. He runs good routes. He gets good jumps. You know, the thing about a center fielder, can he put his head down, run without watching the ball, look up and catch it? Most of the time he does that. And offensively, if he gets away from trying to use the entire field, he's not that guy. You know, occasionally you can be that guy with a runner on second late in a game and a guy's throwing 100 and you got to just shorten up and use a two-strike approach and punch it to right, maybe. But mainly be that right center to left field line guy and try and run into 30. You wouldn't take him hitting seventh in your hitting 30 homers. I wouldn't. Playing the defense he's playing and can give guys days off, you know as well as I do. All these guys aren't going to stay healthy. You need that guy. Who would you rather have, Jonathan Davis or him as your fourth guy? It's those kind of things. He's answering the bell. He's bought into, okay, it's a little bit of you against me. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go up and show everybody that I can have a quality at bat, and I'm going to play some plus defense.
George Springer, by the way, is expected to be back on Thursday when the Jays open the home portion of their season in Dunedin.
I know what you're going to ask me. DH, Teoscar, put Randall in right field.
Okay, that was my question right there.
Or you could put George in right field because he wouldn't have to run as much.
I'm going to tell people, I understand we're putting George Springer in center field. Remember, George Springer is a better defensive right fielder.
Way better. It's not even close.
So I'm with you on this. I think we're going to see him play a couple of those positions. I think you're right. Right field will be a little, I mean, it's an oblique. You're still going to have to throw the ball. But I would think right field would be a little easier.
He can play deeper in Dunedin because the ball flies there in right field. Yeah, he doesn't have to run as much.
Good point. It's a good point.
Like, you need the guy that's healthier 100% in center field.
But then you're right. I'm with you. Then Teoscar's my DH because Teoscar can hit lefty and righties. And Grichuk's my center fielder. Like, I think I'm not – it's dangerous to sleep in Rowdy Tellez, and I'm not saying we do that yet. And he is at first base today. Vladdy Jr.'s DHing. So – but, man, the game's not going to wait for him.
It's not. I've been the guy that says you put Rowdy Tellez in the lineup and you leave him there. But early in the season when you're trying to gain some confidence and get on a roll, when you know, dog days of August and in the summertime, you know, the rotation may show up. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean in a good way.
No,
it may show up in a bad way, and you're going to need some confidence, and you're going to need to gain a little bit of distance between the other teams. And why not do that and play the hot hand? If Rowdy's not hot right now, You know, you may spread him out and play him just against righties. You wouldn't play him against lefties. You may pinch him, hit him a little bit. You may need to see him have those better at-bats. Think his way through the at-bat. You know, he doesn't have to get a hit all the time to have a quality at-bat. And if Randall's getting it done, that's why when everybody was saying, you know, you trade Randall plus somebody to get a pitcher.
Well, we still
not me.
Let's just hold off. We still may need to have that conversation at some point. Let's still plenty more Ross Stripling starts to go, my friend. Let's just, and Tanner Roark is rattling around there someplace. So let's just kind of hold off on what we would do or wouldn't
do. Overreaction Monday.
There's a lot of overreaction. I'm not saying you go out and make the trade today, but I'm just saying that let's see this rotation a couple of times.
You're going to be shocked at my answer. I think you go out and get a plus defender in the infield and move some people around that way, then get you another. You got enough hybrid guys can make up for
weaknesses. Who are you going to move around?
You'd have to, well, you think about that. You figure it out. You know, is Kevin Biggio a lock at third base?
See, I think
he doesn't make an adjustment offensively, is he a lock every day to play third base? You ask yourself, right there, you might be where you start.
Yeah, I think you stick with Bo at shortstop right now. We'll have this discussion. There's plenty of time to have it.
Sure.
There's plenty of time to have it. And, you know, maybe we'll do it in the next hour when we take your calls as well. I think at some point Bo is going to move off shortstop, but I don't think it's this year. Well, we've got lots of time to talk about it. It is Baseball Central pregame edition. We are a little more than an hour away from first pitch at Globe Life Park or Globe Life Field. What is it, Jeff? Globe Life Field in Arlington, Texas. Julian Merriweather is a pretty big deal, and he's going to join us in a few minutes. And we will take your calls, 416-870-0590, star 591, 888-666-0590. I'm giving you one chance. Give me your one dominant takeaway, one thing you liked from that three-game series at Yankee Stadium on the weekend. This is Baseball Central, and this is Sportsnet 590, The Fan. All right, a little more than an hour away from first pitch at Globe Life Field in Arlington, Texas. 40-odd thousand fans going to be on hand to see the Texas Rangers and the Toronto Blue Jays. It is Baseball Central. Jeff Blair, Kevin Barker. Going to the phone lines, 416-870-0590, star 591, 888-666-0590. You've heard Barker and myself talk the last hour, some of our takeaways from that Yankee series. I need you, when you call up, to give me your most positive take from that series in New York. It can be about Vladdy Jr. It can be about Hyunjin Ryu. It can be about Bo Bichette. It can be about Randall Grichuk. Or it can be about Julian Merriweather. And you know, Barker, let me, I was thinking about this yesterday. Back in 2000, and I guess it was 2015, it was the last time the Jays opened a season at Yankee Stadium against the Yankees. And people can think back. At that point, Miguel Castro and Roberto Osuna were pretty much the biggest stories coming out of spring training. They both made the roster. Miguel Castro was going to be the starter, or I'm sorry, was going to be the closer to begin, was a closer to begin. Roberto Osuna lit up Yankee Stadium. Roberto Osuna had, I don't know, it was like four punchies or five, six punchies in two innings over a couple of games, just overpowered Alex Rodriguez. And I always remember he asked for the ball afterwards because he wanted to give his mom the ball. And so the next day, A-Rod comes up to him and Osuna's thinking, Jesus, I must have really done something here. And A-Rod just shook his hand and said, hey, keep it up, man. You can be the next Mariano Rivera. Now, obviously it didn't work out for Roberto Osuna, although he did have a couple of pretty good years for the Blue Jays. So all I'm saying is what we saw from Julian Merriweather in that three-game series against the Yankees, the type of overpowering stuff we've seen before. We've seen before from a Blue Jays closer. So I'll just ask you right now, before Julian Merriweather joins us, Barker. Mm-hmm. Is Julian Merriweather the Blue Jays' closer? Let me rephrase this. In a week, Will we be saying categorically Julian Merriweather is the Blue Jays closer?
No.
Period.
Jordan Romano is.
Okay.
Well, he's the highest leverage guy for me is Jordan Romano.
Okay.
Now, look, if Julian can keep 99 with a 79-mile-an-hour changeup, that's all you need. You don't need any more other than that. I mean, occasionally he can choke off a back foot slider to a lefty if he needs it for show, mm-hmm. and then he can elevate and locate the heater. But if he has 99 with the four-seamer and the 79-mile-an-hour changeup, actually writing his name down, and the next time we have Pete Walker on and I or you say, is Julian Merriweather your closer? And he says, yes, he is the closer. I mean, you probably couldn't argue that. But for me, when the rubber meets the road and I need to get three outs, the biggest part of that lineup, who would you go to right now? Jordan Romano or Julian Merriweather?
Yeah, I'm with you.
That's just
It's tempting. It's so tempting to go the other way.
Well, yesterday they did it the way you probably should do it until you see a little bit more from Julian.
Yeah.
Just a little bit more.
Well, as we mentioned, Julian Merriweather, one of the big stories out of that three-game series against the Texas Rangers, and we caught up to Julian a little earlier today. Julian, thanks a lot for joining us. So, tell us, what's it like to stand on the mound at Yankee Stadium late in a game with the lead in the balance?
Oh, man, I mean, it's a whirlwind at first. I mean, a guy like Rivera got saves on that mound, and I'm sure he got saves on a lot of mounds, but the fact that, you know, you're in Yankee Stadium and there's that history there, it's pretty surreal, man. It's just like a very humbling and just surreal feeling out there.
When do you think you'll be ready to go back-to-back games? Is that a call you will make? Is it a call the coaching staff will make? Or will it be almost a committee decision?
Well, I'm just doing everything I can to keep my body in a good place. And right now I'm feeling great. I'm communicating with our staff, obviously, how I'm feeling day-to-day. And it's definitely something we'll probably build up to. And once I'm ready for it, I mean, at this point, the body's fresh early in the season. They just want to make sure that my body can handle it before they throw me out there. But as of now, you know, everything's feeling good. So everything's trending in the right direction right now.
Julie, you just mentioned things you were doing with your body. Is there anything you're doing routine-wise? You know, Ryan Barucki talks about all the time that he's backed off a little bit on how he throws between the times that he's throwing in the game. You know, it's not all-time max effort. He's lobbing some things in just to stay loose. Are you doing anything different? Because the velocity you got right now is almost 99 miles an hour. How do you maintain that?
Yeah, I mean, the routines are big. I mean, last year I learned kind of the hard way about warming up in the bullpen. It's called a scarecrow when you kind of warm up and you don't go in. And that happened to me a couple of times where I'm just rearing back, 25 pitches just in the bullpen, firing balls in there. And that's just, you know, as a reliever, you can't go about your business that way. So the biggest adjustment, at least for my routine, is knowing how to warm up in the bullpen, reading the situation, knowing, hey, when I get out there, I still got 8 pitches to get loose. So it's not about feeling perfect with every pitch in the bullpen. It's just about getting the body going, getting the arm going a little bit, and then knowing that when you're out there, adrenaline's going to hit you. So a lot of that kind of goes away. I just learned I didn't need as many pitches to warm up as I thought I did, you know, coming from a previous starter role.
Julian, when you're in the bullpen warming up, what tells you, first of all, that your stuff is on that day? And secondly, when you come out of there, do you have an idea whether you're, you know, also going to use your slider or your change in addition to the fastball, or is that something you talk about before the game?
A lot of that depends on the matchups, the hitters I'm facing. As far as what I feel in the bullpen, I put very little emphasis on how it's going in the bullpen. You know, my command can be pretty bad at times, and once I get out there, all of a sudden you're locked in, you're pinpoint. So it's important for me not to take too much stock into that. But yeah, I mean, a lot of it comes down to matchups, whether I flip in curveballs first pitch, if the guy's, you know, not looking for off speed early, or, you know, facing them with sliders, chase pitches, fastballs up. A lot of it just really depends on the matchup. And obviously the catchers are going to feel how everything's coming out that day, and I have put a lot of trust into them. I don't shake off much, so whatever they're calling, it's usually a pretty good recommendation behind there.
Yeah, whenever I was a player and I was hitting, you know, I faced a guy named Kevin Brown. I was, you know, thinking more about, oh, no, that's Kevin Brown. Look out there. Instead of thinking about what I was trying to do at the plate. You faced Giancarlo Stanton for the first time on Thursday. Was there any of that, or was it just, it's me against you. Here's my 99. See if you can hit it.
I mean, that's kind of funny because with him, I remember being – back when I was in junior college, I'm from the Bay Area, and I was driving around San Francisco with my buddy, and we see this huge guy crossing the street in front of us, and it's Stanton. And this is when he's with the Marlins, they're playing in San Francisco, and we're like, holy crap, that's Stanton. We gotta take a right turn and on one-way lane traffic with three lanes, so we cut across everyone. I get a picture with him. So, I mean, yeah, to kind of put that in my rear view when he's up there was something that I had to learn. Definitely learn how to do when you're out there. But yeah, with Sam, he's a big imposing guy, but at the end of the day, I'm just looking at, you know, where I'm trying to execute my pitch, trying to find holes that might be there and execute it.
Are you really as comfortable and relaxed on the mound as you seem on TV? And do you buy into the idea, Julian, that, you know, a closer has to act a certain way, right? Like, I've been here before. I got the ball. I'm controlling this game. Do you buy into that whole thing?
Yeah, it's definitely a mentality shift as a reliever, first and foremost. You're going out there more max effort than as a starter. You don't have time to feel for stuff. And then, I mean, as a closer, yeah, I think you got to be a little bit off. I wouldn't say I'm as crazy as most. I would probably plead, like, temporary insanity out there. So it kind of comes and goes. But some dudes, I mean, some guys are just absolutely nuts. And that's pretty fun for me to see those guys, too, because their intensity is off the charts. And that's something that I've tried to emulate, at least being a closer. I mean, in that high stress, intense situations, you got to bring a lot of intensity and focus. So that's what really I'm thinking out there. I'm not sure how it comes across on TV, but in my own head, I'm pretty crazy out there.
Hey, you know, one thing about bullpens, they develop their own culture. You know, they develop the – I mean, we used to talk about guys, LaTroy Hawkins, and he was here, would kind of be the sheriff of the bullpen, B.J. Ryan for a while and all that. What's the bullpen culture like now? You know, like, I mean, we see Jordan Romano walking around holding the ball in the glove from about the first inning on. What's it like in there?
I mean, yeah, speaking of psychopaths, Romano's great. He's a fun guy, great guy to have in the bullpen. Honestly, our whole bullpen is really fun to be around. There's a few things. You don't talk to Romano after the fifth. But I mean, we have some great guys down there that kind of keep everyone straight, keep everyone in line. I mean, honestly, we just have a lot of fun hanging out with each other. So it's pretty relaxed, but, we all know when it's game time that, you know, everyone's pretty confident in everyone else. Like I'm confident in anyone coming in for me or me coming in for them in any situation. So it's a great game.
Did you, check out the MLB network this morning and see how often you were on the loop?
No, I haven't.
You better. You're in the highlights an awful lot, my friend. You and Shohei Ohtani got a lot of airtime.
Right on.
All right.
I think we're facing him in like 4 days.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to that.
Can't wait.
So, man, I'll face him and our hitters will also face him. It's kind of a, you know, everyone's going to face him.
Hey, Julian, thanks for doing this, man. Yeah. Stay healthy. Keep it going. And we really do appreciate your time.
Have fun.
Awesome. Appreciate it, guys.
Thank you.
Have a good one.
Take care.
That was Julian Merriweather. Not much personality there.
No. Yeah. Have you ever? How long have you been covering baseball?
A while.
Okay.
Since '89.
Have you ever heard a bullpen guy call getting up, getting loose,
scarecrow,
not going into a game, a scarecrow?
No. You know what?
Never heard that.
You know what I've heard it called? Can I say the?
I don't think so.
I'm gonna anyhow. I mean, they used to call it a dry hump. Well, they did.
Yeah.
That's what I was always. Scarecrow is, you know, a little more.
It is.
You know, get up and get going and get loose and I can't wait to get. Oh, now I got to sit down.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, nothing drives relievers around the bend more than that.
That's how you get hurt.
That is exactly how you get hurt. That was, I always tell a story that B.J. Ryan told me that one of the things he liked about John Gibbons is that Gibby wouldn't get you up unless you're getting in the game. And if he did, the rare time, he would apologize. He'd call you in the office and say, that was my bad. So It is a thing that, I mean, there's an art to bullpen management, and that's part of it. Joe Kerrigan, the Expos pitching coach, used to say, look, you only have so many pitches in your lifetime. It's a finite number.
Yep.
And the idea is not to use them up unless they count.
Yeah.
And it's very simple.
Yeah, getting loose means max effort. Max effort for most of those guys today in 2021 is 98 plus. Yeah, y'all only got so many bullets. Yeah.
The Blue Jays lineup for today is as follows. Marcus Semien leads off at second base. Gavin Biggio's at third base. Bo Bichette is at short. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is the DH. Rowdy Tellez back at first base. Giddy up, Rowdy. Randall Grichuk in right field. Danny Jansen behind the plate. Jonathan Davis gets a start in center field. Lourdes Gurriel Jr. The day off. And Steven Matz on the mound for your Toronto Blue Jays.
Rocking the boat.
But
I like the same lineup. I mean, they've mixed it around a lot. You just left Yankee Stadium winning 2 out of 3. People got a little bit of a quiet routine of where they're hitting in the order. If you walked up and asked, a hitter, I used to try and hit. Yeah, it's hard. I didn't want to have to worry about, am I hitting fourth one day? Am I hitting ninth the next day? No. I know everybody gets tired of hearing that, but there's a little bit to that. And when you're winning, you got a little confidence. I can understand you give one guy, you mix it up with one guy, but three or four guys? Come on, Jeff.
Hey, I'm going to, a couple of updates, by the way. Just going to throw these out here before we take the break. A couple of updates involving former Blue Jays, friends of the show, as a matter of fact. Devin Travis has just been hired by the Atlanta Braves as a minor league coach. Actually, a nice little DM exchange with Devin Travis. Says hi to everybody out here. And Aaron Sanchez is scheduled to get the start tomorrow night for the San Francisco Giants against the San Diego Padres and Yu Darvish. Aaron pitched, I believe, 5 1/3 in spring training and struck out Christian Yelich in 5 straight curves. The Giants saw enough of that curve that they're basically taking a shot at him.
Mm.
$4 million.
Sinker better be working.
Yeah.
Care about that curve.
Yep. No, but I mean, the curve is the pitch that got there.
Curve's only good when the sinker's working, Jeff.
That is true. To celebrate the Blue Jays home opener on Thursday, we're giving away more Blue Jays prize packs this week. Listen for the secret player names every day and text them to 590-590 to enter. You can win a Blue Grit kit, which includes all sorts of Jays merchandise, such as face masks, T-shirts, and discount codes for jerseys. Text Romano to 590-590 right now to enter. And for full contest details, go to sportsnet.ca/590. Also, don't forget to download the MLB Ballpark app to play games and keep up with the Blue Jays. Be sure to tune into our home opener with our coverage starting at 6:30 p.m. Thursday on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. We promised you the phone lines. We will deliver you the phone lines. 416-870-0590, *591-888-666-0590. What was your most impressive takeaway from that series at Yankee Stadium? And did anybody, it's Overreaction Monday, did anybody change your mind? Don't worry, we're not taping it. You can say something and then you can change your mind again as well in another week. That's the way we roll here. It's Baseball Central, Blue Jays pregame edition on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. All right, we gave you the Blue Jays lineup. The Texas Rangers lineup is submitted by manager Chris Woodward. Isaiah Kiner-Falefa at shortstop. David Dahl in left field. Joey Gallo in right. Nick Solak at second base. Nate Lowe at first base. Jose Trevino behind the plate. Brock Holt, still playing, man. Brock Holt is a DH. Eli White's in center field. Charlie Culberson at third base. Fulte. Mike Foltynewicz getting the start for the Texas Rangers. Had some pretty good success against the Blue Jays in the past.
That is nickname?
When he was with the Atlanta Braves. Yeah, Fulte. It's a hockey-ish nickname.
Mm.
You know, like hockey nicknames is just generally, if there's more than 3 syllables, they just add an ER or an IE.
You just made that up, or is that really
a nickname? No, Fulte's his nickname. Alex Anthopoulos called him Fulte in an interview we did with him one
well
time.
Well done.
Yeah, the memory of a mule.
Oh, you're all over it.
4:07 will be the first pitch today from Globe Life Field in Arlington, Texas. The home opener for the Texas Rangers, the Blue Jays 2-1 after that series win in the Bronx. I was thinking of Baltimore. I have no idea why.
Because they're in first place, Jeff.
Shut up. Clifton and Etobicoke, what is up, my friend? And tell me, what was the thing you saw in the Bronx this weekend that was, you know, the defining moment for you? What was your big takeaway? And how are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing very well, Jeff and Kevin. Listen, the thing for me, Jeff, was the way in which those guys won. It's like there was no one with, you know, overwhelming stats, but they were able to pull off those two wins. And I was listening to Kevin on with those guys on the post-game show, and he was saying how important wins are in order to build confidence. Mm-hmm. And those, to me, are two nice confidence wins. And, you know, we've been hearing all the talk about the pitching staff all off season and coming into this season. So, Kevin, I want to ask you this, man. Jeff, you know, like you've covered the sport closely over the years. I've always believed that, you know, while securing a big contract is the biggest motivating factor for pro athletes individually, as a collective, proving doubters and naysayers wrong is also a serious driving force for these guys. And I'm thinking, you know, listening to all these criticism of the pitching staff, and I heard Pete Walker on earlier. I love this guy. Yeah. This guy, to me, is one of the best. It's probably the most important person on the Blue Jays management staff. Mm-hmm. Because this guy survived. How many managers now? Three?
Mm-hmm.
So you know how important this guy is because of his ability to turn around these reclamation projects into, you know, like high-paying pitchers or, you know, like guys who can serve the organization well. It's very important. So, Kevin, mm-hmm. my thing is this, buddy. You think that these guys, having listening to all these criticism, if this could be the rallying cry that could keep these guys together. And like you said, like once these victories start piling up, man, look out. These guys could continue on. And I'm telling you, like, you know, I've always been the eternal optimist, Jeff, as you know. Hmm. But I'm seeing some nice things from these guys. And every year in the major league, we always see one of these teams that nobody was given a chance. I'm not saying that no one is giving the Blue Jays a chance, but with all the question mark you hear around the pitching, it almost seems as if, you know, people think that it's just a matter of time that they're just going to start folding up. But I think these guys could be dangerous, you know, once they turn for home and the real running starts because of the confidence that, you know, like these guys together. Jeff, I know one of your favorite quote is always that the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. And I think this could be a classic case right here.
Mr. Barker, I'll hand it over to you. Clifton, thanks, man.
Yeah, thanks for the call. I think it's more of, let's say an example, Steven Matz. If I were Steven Matz, I wouldn't read a paper. I wouldn't watch the news. I wouldn't watch the MLB Network. He really has not had a good couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the things he's done as a New York Met has not been really good.
Mm-hmm.
He's coming to the American League East to reinvent himself as a pitcher.
Maybe make some money.
And he is left-handed. Really good right-handed dominant lineups in short ballparks. To think that you're going to go, okay, I'm using this as fire, this as fuel. Maybe certain individuals, team-wide, I just don't think baseball works that way. I think if you can't hit a curveball, you can't hit a curveball. Like it's one of those things where you have to be very aware of what you do well and especially what you don't do well. The big league level, it's Kevin Biggio is a prime example. Well, we were so impressed, and every time you hear Mark Shapiro on, man, we've never seen a nine-pitch out as consistent as we've seen Kevin Biggio. We love that. Working the count, and, you know, when he does make an out, it's that nine- or ten-pitch out. We love that. You know, passing the baton and letting the next guy behind you see what a pitcher's got. Well, the league's made the adjustment now. Let's spin it to you early in counts. Let's get ahead, mm-hmm. and then let's elevate with something hard. Can he make the adjustment? It's the little battle in between the game that can make you better, and when you're better, the entire team is better. I just think it is, you know, is my lineup, is my team physically better than the team that we're lining up against on the other side? I think it's more about that than the other part of it.
Yeah, I don't know. Ryan Dempster's had a great answer when he was on, and he was asked about the impact of, you know, people reading their press clippings and all that. And what was his response? He said, even if you don't read the newspapers or listen to the shows, you still hear the questions asked, right? You know, mm-hmm. you still hear the questions asked. I think maybe in a case of a guy like Randall Grichuk, who's been around here for a couple of years, Randall Grichuk is aware of what George Springer's acquisition means to him. He's smart. He's no dummy.
Yeah.
He understands that there's a reason George Springer's here. He understands that George Springer's got a longer contract than he does. He's got more money than he's getting. And he plays basically the same two positions Randall Grichuk plays. So if you're Randall Grichuk, there's two things you can do. You know, one, you can just kind of throw your hands up and wait for a trade. Or another, you look around and go, you know, I am just going to hit the ball and trust that there will be a spot for me in this lineup. And you talked about it with Rowdy Tellez. Listen, if I'm getting nothing out of Rowdy Tellez, then I don't care if you bat left, right, or in the middle. Mm-hmm. If I got Randall, I'm going to let Randall Grichuk have a couple of swings at DH if Rowdy Tellez isn't delivering it.
Yeah, on the flip side of what Clifton was saying, it's look at Vladdy. Vladdy hurt everything. The way he looked, and he couldn't handle it. Yep. It'd come right down to it. His appearance wasn't good enough. It was affecting the way he played, and he needed to fix that. So he was hearing things around, and that motivated him to go home and lose 45 pounds.
Yeah, and Bark, I think pitchers, it's a little different because pitchers are in survival mode a lot.
And they play once a week.
And they correct.
At least starters do.
Yeah.
Here's what I don't like. You want to say what we're liking? Here's what I don't like. They use 15 relievers in three games. Can they do that and win? 15 relievers in three games.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you kind of expected that.
Well, they can't continue to do that.
You kind of expected it.
I mean, it's going to be tough.
Look, I mean, the Ross Stripling. I'd be careful how I say this, right?
When have you ever?
No, but it's they can't. Well, Robbie Ray can't get here soon enough. That's what I'm going to say.
Okay, you say it better. You can't have Tanner Roark and Ross Stripling in the same rotation at the same time. Is that a little nicer way to say it?
Yeah, that's a better way to say it. That's a better way to say it. Eric in Toronto, you're on with Barker and Blair. What was your takeaway from that Yankee series?
Hey, boys. Great to hear Baseball Central's back. I mean, Jeff, I hear your voice every damn day, but Kevin, it's great that you're back.
Thanks.
So I think it's a little bit obvious, but I more want to throw it as a question to you guys. Did anybody really have any inclination that Merriweather was going to be this good this quick? Like, he's been incredible so far. I think that's it's been really good to see him, you know, throwing 100-mile heat up high, and people are swinging. I love it.
Yeah, no, Eric, to your point.
Yeah, that's Ross Atkins and Mark Shapiro thought he was this good.
Answer to your question, no. That's why we have to be careful about jumping on and saying that he's the closer. That's you know, again, it's okay to have adrenaline. You talk about these guys all the time, Ryan Barucki and Chatwood saying about the adrenaline. We're running out of the bullpen and it's 4 miles an hour faster. Okay, July, when you're running out of that bullpen and you're running in slow motion because you've thrown so many innings and you're worn out, are you throwing the same thing you're throwing the first three games of the season?
Mm.
That's why we got to be careful. Like, it's unbelievable to watch a 6'4" guy just, you can't hit what I'm throwing. And I'm going to continue to throw it because you can't hit it and you know it. And I know you can't hit it. that's fun to watch. But can he sit and pitch at 99? 96, everybody sees 96, Jeff. Everybody. Like, 96 is 86 now. It's just okay. He throws 96.
Well, that's why I asked. That's
99 is not 96.
That's why I asked both Pete and Julian the question about when can we expect to see him in back-to-back outings. Because the secret, if he is, and I'm with you right now, it's all about leverage. And right now, there are games where you're going to see Jordan Romano in the high leverage situations. Yeah. There may be games where you see Julian Merriweather. And the leverage, the situation can change. But before I sit here and say that Julian Merriweather is going to be the closer, I need to see him come out in back-to-back games and throw 99. And be healthy.
Exactly.
And I'm not throwing that out there as a pejorative or saying I don't believe it's going to happen, but if we are, well, think of the guys who are closers right now. Mm-hmm. They come out and have to be capable on back-to-back days of throwing max velocity and having their best stuff.
You could argue Jordan Romano in the last game got the save instead of Julian Merriweather.
Yeah.
The part of the order that he was, Jordan was pitching against.
The old story, the most important part of the game, the save can be recorded in the eighth inning as opposed to the ninth.
It is a lot of times. You want your best guy in the bullpen lined up against their best hitters at the biggest time of the game. For me, that's Jordan Romano right now. But it's nice. It's nice for Petey to go, hey, Charlie, you know we got 99 down there. Well, what do we do with it?
Yeah.
You know, all we got to do is try and keep it healthy.
The guy that really – you know, the guy I'm really intrigued in seeing how it shapes out, how it all shakes out, is Ryan Borucki. Of all, and look, I'm Merriweather, Romano, but man, I watch Borucki, and if you can get that coming from the left side late in the game.
I'm with you, but Rafael Dolis for me is, okay, you saw his first outing. He pitched against the middle order.
And that's Rafael Dolis.
The next time he pitched against the same hitters, early on, I think they got to be careful with that. He had a different mindset because he knew they had seen him the same a couple of days ago. It's if they have Dolis with the other two guys that throw super hard with that splitty mixed in, which is a totally different look, and you can throw three different sort of arms that are right-handed at a different lineup in three back-to-back games. That's and then you add in a Borucki and David Phelps. All of a sudden, I know it's early, and these guys are getting their feet wet, and you know, location and what do they not want to throw in certain counts? That's the biggest thing. I don't want to flop one over because I got 96. Why would I flop one over to get one over when I can throw 96 to get ahead? So they're figuring out sequences and when they're not supposed to throw a certain pitch. But you can add the least to the mix and get somewhat of a, you know, just a get it in the near vicinity. You don't have to non-competitive pitches. Yeah. I talk about that a lot. As soon as it's out of the hand, the split finger don't play anymore. He just needs it to look like a strike. And then it can fall off, and you'll get a lot of weird swings that way.
And you know what I love about Dolis?
Well, he don't care.
I love how slow he works. Normally, I don't like slow pitchers. Right? No. I grew up watching Jason Fraser pitch. Jason Fraser could stop time. Seriously, he could stop. He could stop rain in midair. Like this guy was slow. But I like it with Dolis because it's so different and it's so annoying.
As long as
it's got to be a positive, but you're right.
As long as he gets people out, I don't care how it looks.
Or misses like
non-competitive pitch is in. The pitch right out of the hand is a ball.
Yep. 416-870-0590, *590, 1-888-666-0590. Chris in Mississauga, hold your thought. Hold the line. We'll get back to you. It's Baseball Central.
One gun to start for Dylan Cease, and that'll bring up Ohtani. Again, Shohei 2-for-13 with a homer so far on this side of the scorecard.
First pitch swinging.
Oh, and first pitch crushing! Oh, man! Lean into it! 1-0 Angels.
Matty, we said it at the start. I mean, here's a guy that throws a ball 101 on one half of the inning, and the next one hits the first pitch 95 plus, 450 feet.
I mean, that ball was crushed.
Wow.
That was ridiculous. Santa Maria.
Okay, that is an auditory experience. Derek, can you play that, just that swing and the hit again? I just want you to listen to this. Just listen to this. Ah!
Mm.
I mean, you could close your eyes. You could have your eyes closed, and that is gone. That ball was gone.
The last time I heard that sound was when me and you were standing behind the batting cage, and Jose Bautista was in the middle of Jose Bautista, and it was just, you didn't even have to turn around. You knew who it was. The last time I ever heard that, Jeff, I am not kidding you. I got traded the very first time from the Brewers to the Padres. And I was in big league camp, and Ryan Klesko was on the big field. That's what they do, right? They put all the starters on one field.
Barker,
and they
field
put
six.
Barker on the field. You got to take it. You know, I'm walking like 25 minutes later. I'm so worn out. I ain't worth anything. But you could hear the sound, and I cannot remember who I was talking to, but I can remember going, who was that? Who is that? And everybody knew who it was. I'd obviously just gotten there, so I was saying, who is that? And everybody knew it was Ryan Klesko, but I'm saying it was – It's a special thing. The only thing that I'm going to say about that is it is tremendous. And if he does what Mike Trout says, which is win 10 games and hit 30 homers, he'd be the greatest baseball player that I've ever watched. And the other question is,
it would
can
be
he
the
actually
greatest,
do it?
It would be the greatest year I've seen. I mean,
Barry Bonds and the things he did with the bat. But
it would be the greatest year. Shohei Ohtani's home run last night was clocked at 115.2 miles per hour. It went 450 feet. He also threw 101 miles per hour in that game. He left the game with, there was a play at home plate and he appeared to twist his ankle, but he looked fine. He was out afterwards celebrating and the angel said he was okay. But prior to Ohtani, only one pitcher had thrown a 100 mile an hour plus pitch and even hit a 100 mile an hour home run in the same game. That was Noah Syndergaard. Whoosh. May 27th, 2015.
Yeah.
Ohtani had 9 pitches at 100 plus. That's the second most by an Angels starter in the pitch tracking era. Topped out at 101.1.
Yeah, I don't.
Guess who's coming to Dunedin? Jesus.
I don't want to be.
Guess who's coming to Dunedin?
I don't want to be mean, but I'd love for A-Rod one time to tell me how a guy gets a head out on 97 one time instead of telling me what I just saw.
Yeah.
I mean, every once in a while, Jeff, I won't be mean, but. Yeah. You know, how's he learn how to hit an elevated heater? That ball was up and away at 97.
Yeah. See, what I just wonder about, this is impossible, but I wonder about the two skill sets he has. The skill set to throw a hondo and the skill set to hit it. And these are two completely different skill sets.
It is. And how long can he do that?
That's
the big question. I don't even know how you would manage that.
You know what I was thinking?
But every guy we have on here that's a bullpen guy, all he ever talks about is routines.
I know.
What's this guy's routine?
You know what I was thinking last night? How would the Tampa Bay Rays use a guy like Ohtani?
Oh, man.
Hey, come on.
Take him out, bring him back in the eighth and ninth inning, let him hit.
Go Rays, go.
There you go. Go Rays, go. Rays up. Chris in Mississauga, what is up, my friend?
How you guys doing?
All right, man. All right, so what was your big takeaway out of Yankee Stadium?
Getting those 2 out of 3 wins from New York. Who would have thought that? I thought we were going to get that just one win, but Ryu pitched well. But I couldn't help but notice Romano-Merriweather combination. It reminded me of that Dwayne Ward-Tom Henke combination back in 92. But I know it's early, but I couldn't help but think about that and wanted to hear your guys' thoughts. Love you guys. Can't help. Can't wait to see more games.
Yeah.
Awesome.
I'm with you, man. Thanks, Chris. No, listen, I was thinking that yesterday. I wish they were coming home Thursday and we're going down to the Rogers Center to watch. I mean, I'm ready to watch a baseball game live.
I wonder how the players feel for the Blue Jays, thinking that now it's a 7-inning game. I pick on you about the Rays. But if you're playing, you're an everyday position player about the Rays, you're playing 7 innings. You know, all I have to do is get the lead for the 7th, and then I turn it over. And normally for the Rays, it's 6 innings.
Yeah.
You're shortening the game, and that's what those guys did. The swing and miss stuff, you know, it is so fun to watch.
Now, like I said,
when you're invested in that team, can he continue to throw 99? That's the question.
What I liked out of that series is just this stuff. they got out of jams with stuff in the first game,
yeah,
and they put it away with stuff. There was no magic. It was just pure, filthy stuff.
And
there was no magic.
And they're
to
taking
it.
The next step.
There was no fluke to it.
Baruchy's added a cutter. That means he likes the sinker. He likes the velocity on his fastball. He's figured out his routine. He likes the back foot slider. You know, he can get me over breaking ball. He can put you away with one. He can use the, you know, all quarters of the strike zone don't matter if you're left-handed, you throw 96, 97.
Yep.
You just need to work up and down with it and get ahead.
One thing Chris said, because a couple of people reached out in social media yesterday as well, and they said, I mean, the Jays haven't had this much heat in the back of their bullpen since Warden Hanke. I am just going to throw this name out there because he is forgotten. And again, I'm not criticizing you, but folks, you got to understand, stuff did happen between 1993 and 2015. Mm-hmm. There was a whole bunch of baseball played in there. Billy Koch, man. Billy, take a look at his velo.
Mm-hmm.
Like, with all due respect to Jordan Romano and Julian Merriweather, it ain't Billy Koch. I'm not saying that, but I'm just saying.
Here's the difference between a person that throws hard and a person that can locate a secondary pitch and throw hard. Jordan Romano is not good because he throws hard. He's good because he can throw a strike with a slider. That's why he's good. Everybody is a big word, but most everybody that you see coming out of bullpens, especially on teams that are good, throw hard. It's the guy that can, like Jordan Romano, who can flip that. Julian Merriweather, the first couple of games, the changeup. You got that changeup, now what? I got to cheat to hit the 99. Mm-hmm. I'm out in front rolling over the changeup or I'm swinging through it. Jordan Romano, you see him thinking. He flips the slider, middle of the way to a left-handed hitter. You could see him. They step out going, now what? Do I cheat to the heater because I can't see it because he's throwing across his body? Or do I sit something middle of the way soft? The more you guess, the less of a hitter you're going to be. Can they sustain this? That they are. It's about overusing it. How many, you know, sooner or later, the starter is going to have to pitch more than three innings or four innings. So, you know, somebody other than Ryu's got to step up and say, I'm the guy.
Maybe today's the day. Speaking of overreaction, if Steven Matz has a great outing today.
Whoa.
Cassie and Claremont, what is up, my friend?
Hey, boys, I love it. Good to hear Robbie back with you boys. I'm just thoroughly impressed from the way that, you know, our bullpen worked over this against the Yankees, because literally coming in, we all expected to be 0-3, get smashed.
Ryu game. Come on, you had a chance with Ryu.
Get us one, but I am super impressed with the play of TJ Zoik, how he went out there yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really Simeon. I'm and Lourdes Gurriel. Like, I honestly look at this Blue Jays team, and I know it's Toronto overanalyzing and getting too hyped up and have the parade.
It's all right.
But if you think about it, because, like, as I'm sitting here holding online, I feel the Los Angeles Dodgers, you look at that pitching staff, and a guy like Gosselin, who just went on the DL, like, he can't even crack the roster. Mm.
Where would
he be on the Jays right now?
No, your point is, Cassie, thanks for the call, man. Yeah. Your point is well made. I don't think this rotation, I've said this, I don't think this rotation's good enough to get in the postseason. If Robbie Ray's healthy, maybe. But I just can't have Tanner Roark and Ross Stripling in my rotation. And that's not to say that they're not useful pitchers. I certainly think Ross Stripling's got some use and got some utility.
Yeah.
But you're not going to be able to win with them. Even if you know, as Barker says, even if you cut it down to a 6-inning or 7-inning game, at some point it catches up to you. You know, at some point it catches
up to
you. A
marathon, not a sprint. Nate Pearson coming back, and if Nate Pearson can give you anything, that would be a nice surprise. I know you're not sold on what can he do, but, you know, if he's healthy and – confident and can mechanically, you know, keep it in line, would it play?
Yeah.
Is it better than Tanner Roark? I'll give you that. That's a better question.
Well, one of the things we may see with Nate Pearson is, you know, because of his injury history, I mean, there may be a kind of a built-in innings limitation here. And I'm just saying there's a chance it may be less of an issue.
Let's hope
than we think it's going to be. I still think you've got to look at Nate Pearson and say that whatever he gives you is gravy. And I don't think you can count on if you want to go to the postseason this year, right? If you are convinced that the team that took you to the postseason over 60 games, that's what this team really is compared to the team that had 95 losses or whatever it was 2 years ago, you're going to have to do more than just have Nate Pearson come back.
Yeah, when you're talked about being the number one pitching prospect in all of baseball, there's a little bit comes with that. You get talked about a little bit differently. Show us. I get your point, and you don't know what you expect, but throw a fastball to somebody. Have some confidence in what got you to be a big leaguer. To do that, that's a start in the right direction. Trust that, you know, I don't always have to try and throw 110 miles an hour. That would be, I think a little bit more of Nate Pearson than you do.
No, it's not that I don't think, listen, I'm all in on him, but I'm not all in on him this year. I can't depend on Nate Pearson to be the guy that takes me over the top.
Depend is a big word.
Well, that's what we're talking
about. Expect a better approach than he had last year. That's what you can. And you would think with the talent, if he has a better approach, it's going to translate into giving them better outings.
All I want to see from Nate Pearson this year is I want to see him contribute at some level in the major leagues, and I want to see him finish the year healthy. That's all I want to see
That's kid's gloves. Give him the ball and let's see it. You big leaguer or not?
We're just a few minutes away from first pitch, Globe Life Field in Arlington. So we talked to Pete Walker about this. Barker, what are you going to look for with Steven Matz? What is going to tell you early in this game? Because, you know, the Rangers are going to, there's going to be a little bit of, it's their home opener.
Sure.
You know, they're going to be a little amped up. What are you going to look for from Steven Matz early in this game?
Dominating lefties. You got Gallo and Lowe, who are their two of their better hitters. They're left-handed. You dominate them. If you're going to be a better than pitcher than what you have been, and you're left-handed and you got pretty good stuff, you got to dominate left-handed batters. That'll be a thing. Reaction to your pitches from the right-handed hitters, that'll be another thing. The expectations of what you're going to see from him, he almost had a 10 ERA last year. You could throw it against a window and think about what you might see from him. Petey is a very optimistic pitching coach, and he is, you know, he has to sell it to his players to get them to buy in. Now it's a little bit of that. Can you locate a heater? Can you expand with a secondary pitch? Can you get back an account with something that you do that's not velocity? Let's see a little bit of that and not have a true expectation with him. Simplify it. You're facing left-handed hitters. You got pretty good stuff. Get through them easily. I know Gallo's a pretty decent hitter. Got tremendous power. Lowe's gotten off to a hot start. You got good stuff. Show us with those couple of guys, and then let's see reactions to his pitches from the right-handed hitters. Is the breaking ball working? You can tell if a guy's got good stuff. Jeff, you've watched enough baseball. When a hitter's facing a guy, you can tell
by his reaction.
Oh, like yeah. They're like, we got to get it geared up, or I can't swing at that anymore because it's nasty. Reaction to the secondary pitches and to how much his fastball's moving and to the tempo of his game. You know, tempo tells you a lot about a pitcher. Tempo tells you a lot about a hitter.
Mm-hmm.
You're uncertain when you're walking around the mound, unless you're Dolis. you're uncertain about, you know, what you want to throw and it's, oh man, can I get it over the plate one time?
Barker, this is fun. Thanks for doing this, man.
That's awesome.
Jays and Rangers, just a few minutes away from first pitch at Globe Life Field in Arlington, Texas. We will pass you over to Rob Wong. Dan and Buck will have the call of the game. Blue Jays talk after the game. Barker will be making an appearance. We'll be back tomorrow. Enjoy the baseball, everybody.